Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest, as always, is going to be a barrel of serious fun. And I met her last week, I believe, because I went to a play of hers called Lovesick, the Cat Allergy Musical, because Flash, by the way, Pamela, had told me it was really funny, and he just loved it, and he was totally a grin talking about it. I had the best time. I would actually see it again and bring friends.
I'm so glad.
It was that good. Okay, let's go to you. Enough about my opinion of you.
No, that's
my guest is Pamela.
So I probably just want to just hear that.
We'll do that later. We'll have lunch and I'll laud you. So Pamela Holm, who is many things, and I just learned, did a radio show at one point. Pamela and I have met like 45 seconds ago. So
yes.
I don't know anything. We are unprepared. As always, I like that. Let's see what happens. And I want to go to you. Talk about you. And like, where'd you grow up and how, and what made you think you could write or know you could write?
I grew up in San Jose, which never quite agreed with me. Mm-hmm. And then I, anyway, I didn't start writing until I was almost 30.
Oh, so what?
Yeah, I went to art school. I danced. I did all kinds of, you know, I painted, made things, and then...
What happened at 30?
You know what happened? This is a Carrie Fisher story.
Go ahead.
I saw Postcards from the Edge with my boyfriend at the time, and it was the first time I'd seen a smart-ass woman doing anything but getting in trouble. You know, I saw someone actually being funny and not being a bitch, you know? And it was... And we left the theater, and I said, I think I can do that, which was weird. I never had written. I never thought about writing in my life.
You said with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Had you been married previously?
I had been married. I was married when I was 22.
So you would learn a little something about life and love. And
yeah, I grew up pretty quickly. I've been on my own since I was about 15, 16 years old.
Did you leave home then?
Yeah. Last year of high school, I had my own apartment.
And that was okay with your parents?
I didn't really care about
okay.
at that point.
Okay. So that's
it was better than living with them, and it was just fine.
Okay.
You know, it was great.
And obviously you found your way and did well.
Yeah, I've done okay. You know, it's...
What was your first book?
My first book was called Objects of Desire, and it was took place in San Francisco in the art world. So most of my business life, I've spent working with artists, building sculpture, and also as like an agent, getting public art projects for people. So I would work with the artist, introducing them to the world of public art and helping them get themselves together
to
apply.
Who did you work with?
I worked with Dana Albany, who's Flash's partner.
Of course.
I worked with Cork Markeski for years and years. That was how I started doing this.
The reason I'm asking, I wondered if you ever worked with Brian Goggin.
I did work with Brian Goggin.
Oh, my goodness.
For many years, yeah. Right after Defenestration, he and I started working together, and I got him projects hand over fist. We actually were a great team. And I, you know, ended up working in his studio with him because we got so many projects. It was overwhelming.
Well, I just learned about him.
Yeah.
Because I've always loved Defenestration.
You should have him on the radio show.
He's coming.
Oh, good. He is definitely one of my favorite people.
Okay. All right.
It's
well, let's
lovely.
Get back to you. Okay. So your book, what was the subject of it?
It took place in the art world. And basically it was about, gosh, it's funny. I hardly remember. It's about an artist trying to sell a painting to an art collector. And so it's kind of this dance between the art collector. And as I recall, he passes his father-in-law, or like his girlfriend's father, off as an art dealer. And this guy is sort of this charming rogue, very much based on my own dad. And he just takes it and runs. He just becomes great at being a fake art dealer. And... ends up with the girl, and everything I've done, I've sort of done innocently and stumbled along. Mm-hmm. So I started writing essays after my Carrie Fisher moment, and then I started sending them out.
Where did you send them?
To the Chronicle, and to the Guardian, and then to all kinds of newspapers. You had to go look up the newspaper, find the address, write it down, send it, you know, it was a whole different non-electronic era. But I sent them all over, and I got published right away. And so I kept writing more, and they were all, you know, funny things. And then I wrote a book, and I didn't know I was really writing a book. I was like, oh, it's a short story, and it just keeps getting longer.
Oh, yeah, there's a difference.
And then I mailed it to somebody in England who was like the roommate of somebody who I was having a cocktail with, who said something about publishing, and I got his address, and I mailed it to him. And like a few months later, I get a fax or something. It was fax time back.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so it was published in England, you know, and he said, what are you working on now? And I made up something else, and they bought both books.
And then you were obligated to the second book.
I was, which I wrote, and they decided not to publish about seriously like 10 days before the pub date.
Oh. Wow.
So that was pretty devastating. Oh, it could have been any number of reasons.
Oh, I mean, that is such a difficult industry.
Oh, I've had my teeth kicked in so many times.
Okay, so then this is a good lesson, and don't give up even by the time you're toothless.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Keep going. But I did stop writing for a while, you know. I kind of looked around. My life was, I was broke. I was a single mom, which was fine. I loved being a single mom. But all of my energy had gone into books. So anyway, then I didn't write for some time, and then I was getting married again, and I wrote this book called The Toaster Broke, So We're Getting Married.
Okay, so do you want to talk? I did read a tiny bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
When you, the things you sent me. Talk about that.
That was
to say yes to that marriage.
Well, that was a memoir. The thing is, we were very mismatched. And there were good things about it, and there was bad things about it. But I started writing about the things that were annoying the crap out of me while we were planning the wedding. And in a way, the book is much more about being a single mom, having raised a child in the city who's now 15, and deciding to merge my life with someone else. And I think I might have married him because he's the only boyfriend I ever dated that my daughter liked.
Oh, that's important.
Yeah.
It's important for a lot of reasons. It's also a sign.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Well, if your children...
Turned out it wasn't the right sign.
If your children and your pets like someone,
yeah,
you
can
do that next. Go
ahead. So anyway, so I finished up that. It was basically a series of you know, essays sort of strung together around the theme of getting married, sort mm-hmm. of dipping into like my past and whatnot. It was, you know, the thing of like, I'm looking at a dress that's a $2,500 dress while I'm sitting in a car that is a $2,500 car, you know, and I have one pair of boots, yeah. You know, like literally one pair of working boots, and that's what I had. Like, I was so, you know, so broke, and it was just it all seemed absurd, and yet you kind of get plowed forward anyway with wedding stuff. So after the wedding, I finished that book, and I sent it to a publisher here in San Francisco, and they bought it.
Wonderful.
It was McAdam Cage.
McAdam
Cage. They had an office over on
Sansom.
No, they actually closed a while back. The yes. Publisher passed
publishers
away.
Publishers in restaurants.
Yeah, but they were a nice little reputable kind of... a boutique publisher.
Okay,
and
good.
Then they did my next book, which was The Night Garden. And that was a novel. Mm-hmm. And also taking place in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay, so let's move on, if we could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I said, you're the boss. You can talk about whatever you want.
No.
But.
You're the boss.
Well.
I'm your guest.
Yes. But really, when it comes to love letters and life stories, you know, the teller is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
But your play.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that? Because I saw a connection with you. We're talking about your first experience, the art dealer,
mm-hmm.
and this play there. And you talked about the dance
mm-hmm.
between the dealer and this play had also a dance about it.
Yeah,
a relationship.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what the plot is and how, if you would.
Well, the plot is basically every single woman
yes,
in the country. it's basically a single woman who's trying to find a date, and there's an obstacle in the way, and that obstacle is a cat.
The cat she got by default,
sort of like a cat that just ended up came with the house that she was in. So the cat actively runs off every one of her suitors in a number of entertaining ways. And, you know, everybody's got something that runs people off. For me, I had my lovely daughter, you know, who literally would stomp down the hallway when someone was at my house saying, I want him out of my
house
now. Like she, I mean, I didn't bring people home when she was little because, you know, I mean, you just don't when you're, you be careful. But it was somebody I'd been dating for a long time, Brian Goggin, in fact. And she, one in the morning, stomping around. I mean, it was hard to, I didn't want to incorporate another person into that life. Yeah. So my way of dealing with it was to date really inappropriate people.
Well, and there is something interesting about that. I remember my daughter, when I was dating, about one person I was going out with, we did things together, but she said, you make yourself less than you really are in front of him.
Oh, how interesting.
That's
a very astute.
She's very brilliant, astute. And she was so right.
Yeah.
She was so right.
Well, that's the thing, is that they are right. They really are.
And I think they're right in two ways. Sometimes they know if somebody's not good for you. And sometimes they need to protect their mother's identity.
Yeah.
And keep her the whole person they know her to be.
Yeah.
For their own safety and hers.
Yeah. I think it's very elemental. And I think it's just fine. Yeah. So this story is kind of that, but not really. I mean, it's not about my daughters. The genesis of doing the story was I set out to do something that was completely silly on purpose. That was going to be the dumbest thing I'd ever done.
Really?
And it was between having written two books, and I had been, you know, like 4 years, you know, 2 years in one book, 2 years. It's like, you know, book tour, all the stress, all the icky things, which is most of publishing. And then I just wanted to do something fun that involved other people. And so
were planning on producing it and having it show, right? Or not?
I just saw it as a play when I thought of it. I'd never written a play in my life. I just saw it as a play. So yeah, I wanted to. And it took a couple years very casually to try and find someone who could do the music for it. And Jim Farinitis, who did the music, I approached him. I met him. I knew he was a songwriter. And I said, give him the script. I said, this is the play. In the script, it said where the songs would be, who would sing them, and what they had to do, what they had to accomplish, what they're about. And he just nailed it. He was amazing. He's like such an incredible songwriter. And all of his songs are earworms. Like and that's why we reproduced it after 10 years.
Oh.
Again, because we had done it 10 years ago.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, and then people still remembered it, and they remembered the songs from it.
Obviously,
so,
the cast was different. I should never say obviously.
The cat is the same.
Really?
Yeah.
He was, the only trouble with him was that when he was on stage, you couldn't look at anything else. I mean, you could, because everybody had that quality.
I know.
But there was a sly sparkle to him.
Yes.
That
yes.
I've never seen any other actor do.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Just a sly little...
I wrote that role really for him. I knew him at the time, and I saw him in that role from the beginning, you know. Just as Flash is that that other role in there that you saw.
Well, also your main character.
Yeah, Serenity, who's played by Robin Coomer.
She was. She is so good.
She's so good.
Her voice is good.
She was in a band called Loop Station that has had a lot of success. They're broken up now, but she's just a beautiful singer. Beautiful singer.
And a really wonderful actress. And a wonderful comedian.
Yeah. And you know what? She hasn't done much stage stuff like that since she was a kid. You know? So she took to it so easily. There was just not an off note from the first, you know, when we first started rehearsing. Yeah. It was just perfect.
I mean, this is, you know, I have a friend, I don't know if you know Barbara Rose Brooker, who wrote a book called There's Something Wrong with All of Them. And, you know, the same attitude on that stage with every suitor who came and wanted a date with her, and she wanted one also.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that flaw. The flaws in people.
Yeah. Yeah. Which in reality is...
We all have.
Right. And you kind of need to fall in love with that too. You know?
Or see how it fits
in. Or have enough of the good stuff to be able to do
right.
with the other
stuff.
My mother
used to say, I mean, I remember this from when I was a child. She used to say, just remember, if people threw people away because of their faults, we'd be the first to go.
Oh, that's a wonderful expression.
Yes.
I like that. My marriage is pretty much based on that.
Yes. Yes. And well, talk for a minute about so we don't want to talk about how the play ends, because will you bring it back?
Apparently, I hear there's a producer from a larger theater coming to watch it. That's all I know.
But you have no more tickets left.
We have tickets for March 16th. We added a show.
Oh, I see.
So that was kind of incredible. I've never had that happen. I was prepared for hustling to fill seats. I wasn't prepared for it selling out by Tuesday after we after we opened. So it sold out for, we're just doing 4 weekends. And so we've added a Thursday night on the 16th, and we have maybe 20 tickets available for that right now.
How do you go about auditioning? How do you let the word out? How do you get these
people? You know what? For it to see the show?
No, to be in it.
Oh, that was hard, actually. One of the reasons we decided to do it for this anniversary is because we had Robin Coomer. And she's a friend of mine, and she was over one day, and I was changing computers. I bought a new computer, moving everything over. And I find the music files from Lovesick from 2007, and I was like, oh, here, listen to this song. Played all the songs for her, and we were cracking up. And then she called, after, she's like, we should do that.
Oh, good.
Play.
So you got something, yeah.
And I was like, I knew if I had Robin that I could get other people and that it would be good.
Where'd you get those mice?
The mice, it was very hard. So I held auditions. I posted it in this Backstage magazine, and we had, it's actually hard, partly because I'm not really in the theater world, so I don't know a lot of that, so it was a little bit cold. So the mice, so the tall one, Lily Marchesky, is Cork Marchesky, who's the artist I used to work for, who's also a wonderful person you should have in. That's his daughter, and she's 18, I've known her whole life, and she's, I've been watching her in plays and performances her whole life, and she's amazing.
You very rarely see somebody who moves like that. Like, from the first when she came on stage, the two mice, adorable. And they did a little hip wiggle.
Yeah.
And I looked at, I forced my husband to come to this. Mm-hmm. He didn't feel like going out. He had the best time.
I
looked at him and I said, that one knows how to work her rear end. I mean, she has the most beautiful, it was like the smallest little indication
of
what was to come.
She knows how to move. Well, went to performing arts school in Oakland for many years.
You can't teach that.
Yeah, no, you can't teach that. And she lights up on the stage, but she also just lights up everywhere.
Lovely.
She's a lovely girl. Yeah. And someone was like, "Oh man, she outdances Beyonce." I mean, she just moves.
Oh my
goodness. Like liquid.
Yes.
And she's such a kind, lovely kid. Yes. And the other one is Michael Kai, who is. He's a young tech guy here, and he's not as young as he's like in his mid-20s, and he's got a beautiful voice, and he's also a good dancer, and the two of them, so first off, Lily's at least 6 feet tall, and Michael is probably a good 10 inches shorter than her, and so it's kind of was my ideal combination, and I felt really lucky to have both of them.
Tell me about the man who played the suitor. All the suitors.
That is Michael M., and he has a San Francisco guy. He's been involved in lots of performances in different theaters. The Dark Room Theater on Mission Street, he did a lot of things there. Jim, who wrote the music, ran the Dark Room Theater for 12 years. He's just recently closed. Anyway, Michael M. is... I met him at Burning Man a million years ago, like 1998 or something. And he's involved in the Long Now Foundation.
What is that?
I wish I could tell you, but I kind of don't.
Okay.
It's a very confusing thing that has good cocktails also.
Well, one of the things about him is he's got no inhibitions.
Yes.
He does not mind looking goofy.
Yes, and that was very much required for this role.
Yes.
He's so charming because he's just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, the roles are ridiculous and that's what I needed was somebody who
could embrace
really,
that. Yes.
And that's the thing that, with that kind of acting, he's like, you have to be okay to look stupid because that's what it's about.
Right. And that's kind of an interesting dichotomy because so much about acting is vanity.
Yeah.
You know, Betty Davis didn't have any.
Yeah. Yeah.
She didn't mind looking old and bald and yes.
Yeah, and I think that everybody in this production
was willing to let themselves go.
Was just willing to have fun, because it isn't about glamour. It's about kind of the harsh reality of, you know.
Yes, and they're okay, let's talk about that in a minute. But I do want to say that I had mentioned that when the cat was on stage, you couldn't look at anyone else.
Yes.
That was actually true of everyone.
Yes.
Each person.
Yes.
So dominated the scene.
That's so good.
That
That's
you
so
couldn't
good
look at
hear.
Anyone else. Yes. Yeah. It was just an equal opportunity.
I feel like there is a real equality with everybody.
Yes.
You know, where it's really an ensemble cast. And the mice really stitch it together. You kind of can't keep your eyes off the mice.
Right. And the fact that this cat wouldn't get rid of the mice.
Yeah, they're all kind of in cahoots.
Right.
You know what I have to say? I did give a shout out for Marjorie Fairchild, who did the choreography.
Okay.
And she brought all of it together. She's the one who brought this, like, really layer of life.
Okay,
so the
mice's maneuvers were actually choreographed.
Yes. Everything was choreographed.
Was gorgeous.
Every step across the stage by everybody was everything is intentional in there. I would tell that to my actors when they were, you know, when we were in rehearsal, and then, you know, it was like, no, every word matters.
Well, I hope you bring it back larger and more, because I feel kind of sorry for people who didn't get to see it.
Well, I would like to, and I also want to start working on a new one with Jim. I want to do another musical with him, because I don't think I'll ever meet anybody who can write songs so effortlessly and so beautifully.
Do you have a plot in mind?
I kind of do, and I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work.
Okay,
well, yeah,
we'll stay
not
tuned.
Exactly sure.
Okay. Now let me ask you something else, because I do kind of base so much of my life on love letters, the stories we tell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever write letters? You can say no if you don't. Don't be shy.
I don't so much write letters. And
what does the so much mean?
Well, I mean, I write books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spent 4 years working on this last book about living in India.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone loved it except my agent.
Oh,
who hated it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So I need to rework that. And she was right. There's things that aren't working about it. And so that's what I'll be doing after this project. I'll be working on that. So the writing sort of tends to, like, when I'm thinking in that mode, everything kind of goes into that.
Okay,
you know?
I have a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because the flyleaf of a book is the most wonderful piece of stationery.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I have a collection of books for my parents, many of whom are signed by authors to them,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, significant writers.
Yeah.
And they have the beauty of not just being the book,
mm-hmm.
but I know that when I touch that book, it has felt the touch of the author's hand. Different than book signings, which people do now, and they scrawl their name across mm-hmm. every little thing so they can sell it more easily. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's a what do you call it, a sales technique.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if a real note to someone in a book,
mm-hmm.
because that will last for generations.
Yeah. It's nice when you actually have something to say.
Yes.
When it's somebody that you...
Oh, that's the only kind
of... You
know,
and that's
right.
the thing, like, when
right.
you have something really... You know, it is hard when somebody you don't know,
right.
like at a book signing, is like, writer, you know, and you're like...
Oh, no, those are... I won't go to those, but yeah.
It's felt so silly, but yeah. Writing those things... I mean, I do... I used to write letters. I used to have a boyfriend that was in England,
mm-hmm.
and we used to fax letters mm-hmm. back and forth. And it was the loveliest thing to come home and
see
or wake up,
out of the,
wake
yes.
up and see this, like, 4 foot, you know, thing. Ribbon
oh,
of
right.
hand
when it came in a drum.
Of handwritten, you know, yes. love letters. Yeah. It was lovely.
Yes.
You know.
So I'm just thinking, even to your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
How old is she now?
She's 32.
Okay. Does she live near you? Or?
She lives right in my house.
Oh, okay. Well, that's definitely...
She lives, we have a little cabin in the back of
oh,
our house. We call
nice.
It the Mouse House. She lives out there just, you know, for a little bit. She went back to school, went to CCA, and got a second degree. So she's working now, and it's
What's she doing?
Great. She's doing industrial design.
Yeah, and so she's doing design research with. I'm just thinking.
You know, a note to her on each of your books.
Yeah. I have to say,
I don't even think you have to give it to. Just whatever you leave in your shelf is going to be found in generations.
Oh, that would be fun. That's fun. The thing is, I think a lot of the books,
my
last book, The Night Garden, was pretty much a note to her.
Okay,
in
so
general.
Won't that be nice then to say so on the that front blank page?
Yeah.
I wrote this for you or to you.
It says to Cara on it.
Okay, so, but yeah, but isn't still, I saying yeah. that?
But to do something
really
again,
pushy.
Yeah.
But handwriting is king.
Yes, absolutely.
I write
by hand when I write anything.
Your plays, you mean?
Yeah,
your
plays, books.
And do you have those around? Do you keep your drafts?
I do. I actually have boxes of
drafts. Good. Okay.
And I wonder why I keep them sometimes, but I can't get rid of them, you know?
Well, I'm glad you can't, and I'll tell you why. Because there is something about the world of found letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I look ahead in ways that maybe many people don't. But I know what it means to find something a generation later.
Oh, wouldn't that be lovely?
Or two generations later. You're an author. You're a playwright. You've got some significance in the world of writing. And when somebody finds this in 80 years or 100 years, they're at least going to get a wonderful PhD thesis out of it. But there's something about, you know, you see this. You see this when something is found in an author's handwriting much later.
Well, have you been to the Manuscript Museum? In London,
I think it's part of the What?
Victoria Albert, the Tate? No, not the Tate. Maybe it's the British Museum.
Uh-huh.
It is the most beautiful, beautiful museum, and seeing everybody's handwriting while they have, you know, on first drafts, original first drafts. There's something so incredibly moving about that. You would love it. You should make a pilgrimage there.
Well, I will.
It's beautiful.
When I'm there, I will go there. I did not even know about it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
because there
is power in that, you know?
There's power in the handwriting because you know that somehow the thought is taking place. It's going, and there's a lot to be said about handwriting and intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's the... people reading your handwriting, what do they call them? Cartologists?
Oh, a handwriting analyst.
Yeah, analysis, yeah.
So interesting.
I did a workshop years ago, and somebody looked at, we all had to write, and she looked at my writing, and she said, you're too busy, you've got everything crowded together, you need to skip a line on your page between sentences, and I still do that to this day. I'm still way too busy, but it kind of does something about that. The words aren't all smashing together. You can kind of see each in their own, partly because I think I'm sort of a little sloppy writer. But there was something about that thought of slowing down, putting some spaces between what you're doing, you know, I don't like being too busy. I don't like the cult of busy.
Well, also that forces you to slow down as you're doing it, I guess, because you have to think about skipping that. It makes you more conscious in some way. Anne Mahoney, who was a wonderful handwriting analyst and has been on this with me. It is such an interesting field.
Yeah.
And it's a serious business.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you for doing this with me. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
As life goes on, if you have something else you want to share about your work or your life or anything.
Great.
Marriage, motherhood, anything at all, come back.
Okay. Well, hopefully I'm on my last marriage.
Oh, that doesn't mean you don't have more to say about it.
It doesn't.
No. Not at all. Okay. Thank you, dear. Well, next time, this is Janet.
Thank you for having me so
much. Thank you for saying yes. I love yes. It's one of my favorite words.
It's a good word.
Oh, my goodness. A world filled with yes. Okay. So we'll talk to you all later. Thank you for being here with us. Bye.